All right, let's dive in. Today we're looking at climate change and how it's impacting where people are choosing to live. And of course, real estate is right there in the middle of it all.
Sounds pretty complex.
Oh, it is. But that's why we're here, right? To break it down, we've got some interesting sources to work with today.
Lay it on me.
Okay, so we have a study about, get this, climate gentrification.
Climate gentrification. Never heard of that.
Yeah, me neither until I saw this. It's pretty fascinating, really. We also have a news piece about Tampa, Florida, and all its record-breaking high temperatures.
Interesting. Tampa's on my radar, actually. Thinking about maybe.
Oh, really? Well, hold that thought because we've got this other article that focuses on Miami and how it's experiencing a development boom, even though it's super vulnerable to rising sea
Oh,
levels.
Miami. Always in the news for something climate related.
Right. So before you pack your bags for Tampa, we should probably dissect all of this. I mean, one article even says Miami could be 60% underwater by 2060.
Whoa, 60%?
Yeah, and get this. Tampa's had the most record high temps in the entire U.S. for the past 4 years.
I knew it was hot, but wow.
So that's what we're doing in this deep dive. We're going to figure out how these pieces all fit together and see what they might mean for the future of these cities, especially for anyone thinking about moving. Which, as you mentioned, you are.
Definitely. These sources sound like required reading for anyone thinking about relocating, not just to Florida, but to any coastal city.
Absolutely. Okay, let's tackle this climate gentrification idea first. The study, it's from Environmental Research Letters, really focuses on Miami. It talks about how rising sea levels are pushing residents inland and leading to, well, some unexpected consequences.
Yeah, and the study doesn't just stop at, hey, people's homes are going to be underwater. It takes it a step further and looks at what happens when those people have to move to higher ground.
Which is where the gentrification part comes in, right?
Exactly. You could have a situation where more people are moving inland, and suddenly demand for housing in those areas skyrockets. That drives up prices, and before you know it, the people who've been living there get priced out.
It's like this domino effect almost. People fleeing the rising seas end up causing problems for another group of people. Kind of a double whammy, isn't it?
It really is. And this study, they estimate that up to 56% of households in Miami-Dade County could be impacted.
56%. That's over half.
I know. And here's another layer to it. A lot of the higher elevation areas in Miami, well, they're historically marginalized communities, often with lower income.
So they're already facing challenges.
Yeah. And then they get hit with rising housing costs on top of everything else. And who knows what happens to the community if everyone's forced to leave.
That's a great point. It really makes you think about the social fabric of a place.
Absolutely. The study uses these terms, stable, migrating, displaced, and trapped. They classify residents based on how vulnerable they are.
So break those down for us. What exactly do they mean?
Okay, so picture this. Stable residents are those who are probably going to be okay. They're not in immediate danger from rising waters, and they have the resources to adapt if they need to. Then you have the migrating folks. They're going to be facing rising sea levels at some point, but they've got the money to move.
Okay, makes sense. What about the others?
Right, so then you have displaced residents. They might not be directly flooded out of their homes, but they'll definitely feel the squeeze. Imagine, your property taxes going through the roof, the local shops you love are closing down, the whole feel of your neighborhood starts changing. That's displaced.
Sounds tough.
It is. And lastly, you have the trapped residents. They're the ones who really get the short end of the stick. They don't have the resources to move, and they're basically stuck in a situation where their homes could literally be underwater.
So, really vulnerable in every sense.
Exactly.
It just goes to show that climate change affects people so differently depending on their circumstances.
No doubt about it.
The study, it mentions Little Haiti as a specific example.
Oh, yeah, Little Haiti. It historically been a more affordable area in Miami. But guess what's happening now? As those wealthier residents are pushed inland by the rising sea levels, Little Haiti is becoming the new hotspot. Lots of development, property values are soaring,
Which sounds good.
but not for the people who already live there. They're facing displacement. They could lose that unique cultural identity that makes Little Haiti so special.
So it's not just about bricks and mortar, it's about people's lives, their communities, their culture.
Exactly. And here's the thing. This isn't just happening in Miami. That study, it lays out a framework that could apply to tons of other coastal communities. I mean, research suggests that up to 13 million people in the U.S. alone could be displaced by rising seas by the year 2100.
13 million, that's hard to even grasp.
It is. But the point is, Miami, it's a warning sign for other coastal areas. They need to start planning now for how climate change is going to impact their own housing markets and their communities as a whole.
Yeah, it's a wake-up call for sure. Okay, so we've talked about Miami and rising sea levels. Let's shift gears to Tampa. Now, Tampa might not be dealing with the same level of sea level rise, at least not immediately, but it's got its own climate change issue. Extreme heat.
I was going to ask about that.
Right. Well, according to this news article, Tampa's been setting heat records left and right. It's had the most record high temperatures in the U.S. for, get this, the past 4 years in a row.
I knew it was hot, but leading the whole country.
Yep. And it's not just the daytime heat. Rising water temperatures are contributing to hotter nights.
I can't even imagine.
I know. And it impacts so much. Think about it. More strain on the energy grid as everyone blasts their AC, health risks like heat stroke, especially for older folks or people with health conditions.
Makes you realize it's not just about those dramatic floods or hurricanes.
Right. Climate change has all these subtle ways of making life harder. So Tampa might not be underwater, but this extreme heat, it's got to make it less desirable to live there, don't you think?
Well, it definitely adds another dimension to the whole where to live decision, that's for sure.
Yeah, climate change is not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. Different regions experience it in different ways, and you've got to look at all the angles when you're making a decision about where to put down roots. Speaking of which, let's talk about Miami's development boom. It's kind of a head-scratcher, isn't it? This CNBC article talks about how Miami is experiencing this huge population boom, lots of investment, even though everyone knows it's vulnerable to climate change. It doesn't really add up.
It is a bit of a paradox. Even knowing Miami could be, what was it, 60% underwater by 2060, people are still pouring in and developers are building like crazy. It's like, are they ignoring the giant elephant in the room?
Right. It really makes you wonder about human behavior and psychology. The article, it even quotes Miami's chief resilience officer, Sonia Brubaker. She calls Miami ground zero for climate change, but the construction just keeps going. New condos, more people. It's wild.
I think sometimes it's easier to focus on the present moment, you know, the immediate benefits, those long-term risks, especially if they feel far off, it's easy to push them aside.
I guess so. And Miami has a lot to offer, right? The lifestyle, the culture, jobs, better taxes than some other places.
Right. And it's not just individuals moving there. This article, it talks about billionaires and companies relocating to Miami, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It even mentions a mansion boom happening because of all this.
Exactly. And all that wealth flowing in, it just fuels the development even more, drives up property values, attracts even more people. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So it's this tangled web of desires, you know, what people want. Then you have economic forces and then this looming threat of climate change in the background. On one hand, you have Miami with all its excitement and opportunity. But then, you know, you have this ticking time bomb of rising sea levels. It could change everything in just a few decades.
It really highlights the tension between short-term gains and long-term thinking.
Yeah.
You know, how do we balance those two things? It's a challenge. And not just for Miami. A lot of coastal cities are wrestling with the same dilemma.
And for anyone thinking about making Miami their home, well, that's a pretty big thing to consider. All that glitz and glamour, it might come with a pretty steep price tag down the line.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've covered climate gentrification, Tampa's heat wave, and Miami's boom. Now let's get down to brass tacks. What about the money, the financial side of all this? What does climate change actually mean for your wallet, especially if you're thinking about living in one of these places?
That's the million-dollar question, right? We need to look at the real costs here, not just the theories.
Right. And this CNBC article, it talks about a bunch of financial risks tied to climate change in Miami. Property damage from rising seas, storm surges, the obvious stuff like hurricanes. But even just heavy rainfall can cause huge problems. And they tell this story about a clothing store owner in Miami.
I read that one. That was rough.
Yeah, Dion Williams, his name is. Every time there's a flood, he's got to replace inventory, repair his shop.
And it's not just the actual money he's losing. It's the stress, the constant worry. How do you run a business like that?
It's a reminder that this is real. It's happening now. And it's not some abstract future thing. It's hitting people where it hurts, their bank accounts.
For sure. And there's another risk we should talk about, saltwater intrusion.
Yeah, the article mentions that. What's the deal with that?
Okay, so picture this. As sea levels rise, saltwater starts to seep into these freshwater aquifers. Those are essential. Drinking water, irrigation, everything. And when salt water gets in there, it contaminates everything. Damages infrastructure, costly repairs, and it could even be a threat to public health.
You're kidding.
Nope. They even speculate that saltwater intrusion might have played a role in that Surfside condo collapse a while back.
The one that just, like, crumbled.
Yeah. They're still investigating, but it's a possibility. It really shows you the effects of climate change. They can be a lot more far-reaching than you'd think.
Okay, so on top of worrying about your house flooding or your business going under, you've got to worry about your water, too.
Pretty much. And if that wasn't enough, insurance premiums in Florida, they're through the roof. They're triple the national average right now.
Triple? Why so high?
Well, insurers, they know the risks are going up in these areas, so they're passing those costs on to the homeowners.
Which makes it even more expensive to live in these places.
Exactly. And for people who are already struggling, you know, lower income folks, it can be impossible to keep up. It's like climate change is adding another layer of inequality to everything.
So it's this vicious cycle. Climate change makes things riskier, insurance gets more expensive, and the people who can least afford it get hit the hardest.
It's a tough situation.
It is. So Miami might have its perks, but you've got to weigh those against the financial risks of climate change. That dream beach house, it might come with a nightmare price tag.
I think that's a good place to pause. We've covered a lot of ground here. Climate gentrification, Tampa's record heat, Miami's boom, the financial risks.
It's a lot to digest. And we're not even done yet, but we'll pick this back up in part two, where we'll dive into some potential solutions.
Welcome back. So I'm thinking about all these problems we've been talking about. It's a little overwhelming.
Yeah, it is a bit, isn't it? But I'm curious, what can we actually do about all of this?
Well, there are some smart folks out there tackling these challenges head on. Everything from, like, scientists to policymakers to people in communities getting organized. They're coming up with solutions, figuring out ways to adapt.
Okay, so where do we even start? I mean, climate change seems like such a massive thing.
Well, one thing that's really promising, I think, is nature.
Yeah.
Using nature-based solutions. We talked about those mangroves before.
Yeah, those trees that grow in the water.
Right. Mangroves. They're a great example of how nature can actually be our ally in all of this.
So instead of just building taller and taller seawalls, we should be looking at how those natural ecosystems can protect us.
That's exactly the idea. Think of it this way. Mangroves, salt marshes, coral reefs, they act like natural buffers. They absorb that wave energy, so less erosion. They can even help protect shorelines from storm surges.
So they're like natural barriers.
Exactly. And restoring those ecosystems, preserving them, it's not just good for the environment. It can actually be a really smart way to make our coasts more resilient. And it doesn't have to break the bank.
It's like working with nature instead of fighting against it.
That's a great way to put it. And there are other cool examples, too. Some cities are trying out these living shorelines.
Living shorelines? What does that even mean?
Well, basically, they're like engineered solutions that try to copy what nature already does. Think oyster reefs. They can help reduce that wave energy. Or they build wetlands that can actually soak up floodwaters. And they can filter pollutants, too.
So they protect the coasts and clean up the water.
Yep. And they create habitats for wildlife. It's a win-win all around.
I like those kinds of solutions. But what about our cities? I mean, the roads, the buildings, all of that. We can't just rely on plants and oysters, can we?
You're right. We've got to upgrade our infrastructure. That means things like elevating roads, maybe even raising buildings, making sure our drainage systems can handle those heavier downpours we're getting with climate change, and building new stuff that can actually withstand floods.
Sounds expensive.
It is. But think about the cost of doing nothing. All that damage from floods, people losing their homes, businesses going under. In the long run, it's way cheaper to invest in that resilient infrastructure now.
Kind of like preventative medicine, right?
Yeah.
Better to take care of yourself now than end up in the hospital later.
That's the idea. And it's not just about building stronger stuff. We need to be smart about where we build things in the first place.
So planning is important.
Huge. Urban planning is going to be a big part of this whole climate adaptation thing. We need to be way more strategic about where we allow development to happen, how we design our cities, maybe even rethink those zoning regulations, you know, the rules about what gets built where, update those building codes to account for climate risks. Even our insurance policies could be adjusted to encourage people to build in safer places.
So basically, don't build in the flood zones.
Pretty much. It just makes sense. We've got to be more proactive instead of just reacting to disasters after they happen.
Okay, so that makes sense for new development. But what about the people who already live in those vulnerable coastal areas?
That's a really important point. We can't just forget about them. Equity and fairness, they have to be at the heart of this whole climate adaptation thing. We need to support those communities. Maybe that means helping them relocate if they want to. offering incentives to retrofit their homes, make them stronger, safer.
So help them adapt in place.
Yeah, exactly. Or if they do need to move, make sure they can do it with dignity and they get the support they need.
Because everyone deserves to live in a safe place no matter what.
Absolutely. It's about basic human rights here. Okay, so we've talked about nature, infrastructure, planning. It seems like a lot is happening. But who's actually leading all of this? Is it the government? Businesses?
Yeah, who's in charge here?
Well, that's the cool part. It's everyone. It's a total team effort. You've got government agencies, scientists, engineers, community groups, even private businesses. Everyone's got a role to play.
I like that. It takes all of us to solve this.
It does. And don't forget about technology. Technology is going to be a huge part of how we adapt.
Oh, yeah. Tech is everywhere these days. How does it fit in here?
Well, think about early warning systems for floods or storms. Way more sophisticated now. They can help us get out of harm's way. And the modeling for sea level rise, it's gotten so much better. We can really see what the risks are in the future. Even the building materials we're using are changing. There's all kinds of cool stuff that can stand up to extreme weather.
Wow. So tech can help us get ready for climate impacts and build tougher stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it can help us talk about the risks in a better way, you know, so people understand what's going on. Get communities involved in planning, like interactive maps that show which areas are prone to flooding, apps that give you real-time weather alerts. Social media helps spread information fast.
So it's not just about the gadgets themselves. It's about how we use them to educate people and help them make good decisions.
That's a key point. It's about using tech to help us solve problems together, you know.
Okay, so we're getting better at adapting. But what about stopping climate change in the first place? That's mitigation, right? Cutting down on those greenhouse gases.
You got it. Mitigation is super important. We can't just adapt our way out of this problem. We've got to tackle the root cause, fossil fuels.
So switching to renewable energy like solar and wind, electric cars, making everything more efficient.
Exactly. And that's going to take a global effort. We need countries to work together, come up with new technologies, and change our policies to make it all happen. It's not easy, but we have to do it if we want to avoid the worst effects of climate change.
But even if we, like, completely stop using fossil fuels tomorrow, there's still that lag, right?
Yeah, even if we did that, which isn't realistic, we're still going to feel the effects of those past emissions for a long time. The climate system is kind of slow to respond.
So climate change is already baked in to some extent.
That's why adapting is so important. We have to deal with what's already happening while also working really hard to prevent things from getting worse in the future.
Okay, so it's a two-pronged attack. Mitigation to slow things down and adaptation to deal with what we can't avoid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not just up to the government or big companies. We all have a role to play. The choices we make in our daily lives, they add up. Whether it's buying energy-efficient appliances, driving less, or even just talking about climate change with our friends and family, all of that matters.
So even little things can make a difference.
Absolutely. When enough people start making those changes, it creates a ripple effect.
I like that analogy, a ripple effect. This has been a really good conversation. We've talked about the problems, explored some solutions, and it seems like there's hope.
There is. We've got to be realistic about the challenges, but we also have to be optimistic and find ways to work together. This isn't just about the science or the technology. It's about people, about communities.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's about us. Now, in part three, we're going to shift gears a bit and focus on the human side of this story. How is climate change affecting people's movements around the world? All right. We're back for the final part of her deep dive. And this time, we're getting personal. We're talking about people, how climate change is affecting where they live, where they move, and the whole migration story.
Yeah, it's crucial to understand that climate change, it's not just numbers on a spreadsheet. It's real people's lives, their homes, their communities, their whole futures.
We've been talking about Miami, Tampa, the risks, the financial side of things, but those are just examples of a much bigger story, right? This is happening all over the world. People are on the move.
Absolutely. It is a global phenomenon, and it's only going to become more prominent. And it's not just about rising sea levels. Droughts, extreme weather, all of these things can displace people.
So we're talking about people moving within countries, like those fleeing Miami's rising tides, but also across borders, seeking refuge in other countries.
Exactly. It's both internal and cross-border migration. And each presents unique challenges. Internally, you often see people moving from rural areas to cities or from coastal areas to higher ground, and that can put a real strain on resources and infrastructure. Think overcrowding, competition for jobs and housing, even social tensions.
Makes sense. And then when people cross borders, well, that's a whole other set of issues.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking about legal status, border security, the ethical responsibilities of nations to provide aid to those displaced by climate change. These are incredibly complex issues with no easy answers.
It's hard to even define a climate migrant, right? I mean, how do you separate that from other reasons people might move?
It's really nuanced, and it often gets intertwined with economic factors, political instability. It's not always clear-cut. But the important thing is that we start thinking about these issues now, proactively planning for potential migration flows, and creating systems that are fair and humane.
So instead of just reacting when a crisis hits, we need to be ready.
Exactly. Preparedness is key. Investing in climate adaptation, creating legal pathways for migration when it's necessary, and building more inclusive societies that can welcome newcomers and support their integration.
That's a lot to tackle. But is there a flip side to this? I mean, can climate migration ever be a good thing?
It's a great question. And honestly, yes, there can be opportunities. Migrants bring skills, talents, fresh perspectives that can enrich their new communities. They can contribute to economic growth, cultural diversity, and even drive innovation.
So it's about managing it for sure, but also about seeing the potential, right?
Exactly. It's about changing the narrative around migration, moving away from fear, and seeing it as a chance for positive change and growth, both for the individuals and for the receiving communities.
It's about seeing the human side of it all.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, this brings us to the end of our deep dive. We've covered a lot of ground, from those rising sea levels in Miami to Tampa's sweltering heat, the costs, the solutions, and now the human face of climate migration. It's been quite a journey.
And I think the key takeaway is that climate change is not just some distant threat. It's happening now, and it's affecting people in profound ways.
But the good news is, people are working on solutions, coming up with innovative ideas, and taking action. And we can all be a part of that.
You're absolutely right. Whether it's making changes in our own lives, supporting organizations working on climate solutions, or even just talking about these issues with our friends and families, we can all make a difference.
So keep learning, stay engaged, and remember, we're all in this together. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.